June 9th, 2008 is the Watt from Pedro Show.
Do you like longer flights?
I've tried how much I might. And don't forget to send a postcard.
June 9, 2008, a sunny, very California-like day here in Brighton, England. It's a lot like Pedro, not just weather, but we're by the sea. And like Pedro, I got to kayak. But first time ever for me to kayak in England. And first time for me to ever kayak in ocean besides Pacific. It was the English Channel part of Atlantic Ocean. And we started off there with Ascension, second version, Mr. John Coltrane. And then we heard Ready, Steady, Go by Hamilton Yarns, and which is from a band, my guest here, Mr. Ian.
Hello.
Yeah. Is part of.
That's right.
What can you tell us about that tune?
The tune. Yeah, it was kind of inspired by a flatmate of mine, Sam. He kept Ready Steady going on his long haul flights, and I don't know, I think I wrote the tune maybe when he was out of the country, but it was just like
on tour.
Yeah, it was just like a little ditty for Sam, and that's why it's, Sam features on it.
Oh, Sam's playing.
Yeah, he's the voice.
Okay.
He's the main voice on that. So yeah, it's just about long haul flights. And,
now the Sam in question is Mr. Sam Duke, and I'm in the pad right now where he lives. Ian lives. Anton.
Yeah, and Marion.
And Marion. So there's four folks here in Brighton. What part of Brighton would you call this?
Sort of downtown.
Downtown Brighton. Okay. And the reason I'm here is, well, I played in Leuven, Belgium, the day before yesterday with Stooges. And next gig is Isle of Wight. So that was a whole week in between. So I thought, whoa, what should I do? Here's an opportunity to record with Mr. Sam. So I came down here and took a train. Tomorrow, the next day, and the day after that, I'm going to try to put as much bass and drums recorded for a project we call Cuz. And in the meantime, yeah, right at the beginning here, got to paddle, and now Me, Ian, I mean, we've played some Hamilton yarns before on this show, and now I get to, have a spiel with the man behind it. Mm. Now, how'd you get into music?
Well, I had a few attempts at playing the guitar when I was a teenager, but it was difficult. And so, like I said, I packed it in until I started making sort of films and videos at college. And this is like when you had sort of analog video stuff where you could twiddle the knobs and it would speed the tape up, and you could have three at once, so they're all speeding up or slowing down, and you end up forgetting about what's on the screen and just listening to these amazing sped up, slowed down sounds, you know. And I really got into making recording sounds and just forget about the image for a little while. And I think gradually just started bringing instruments back into that world, you know, like guitars and drums. And
what made you want to start the guitar in the first place? Did you listen to bands, hear records?
Yeah, when I was younger I was into music, you know. But I think for a long time, especially when I was a little kid, you know, when I was about 8 years old, yeah, I loved music. And we used to listen, you know, used to tape Top of the Pops off the telly, like,
yeah,
every Thursday with a little tape recorder. And but I think a lot of it for me was, maybe at that age, a lot of kids are like that. A lot of it, I didn't associate kind of an activity of playing with the joy of listening and looking at these, like, pop stars, you know.
Yeah.
It was only late, and much later, that I started thinking in terms of, you know, this is people who pick things up and are creating a sound with that instrument. So I got into it quite late, really. I mean, I work with young kids doing music, so I'm exposed to like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 year olds who are really good at their instrument, and really, it's a really important part of their identity. So I feel I got into it pretty late, really.
Well, probably the days were different then.
Yeah,
how
I think
old
so.
Are you now?
Well, I'm 35 now.
Yeah, so we're talking 20 years
ago.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the 80s is so a lot about style and image, and almost, at least for the mainstream, which is what you're exposed to a lot, you know, the early 80s as an 8, 9-year-old kid, a lot of what you see is this kind of glitz and glam. It's not something you think, apart from getting out the dressing up box, it's not something you feel you can aspire to musically. It's more about parading around in makeup and your mum's clothes or something.
Right. And but nowadays you think it's a little different for younger people?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the young people that I've mixed with and work with, they seem quite confident in approaching music, you know, in the way that they hear it. Like, okay, get a guitar, get a bass, you know.
Not so much the dress up.
No, not really. I think it's more, there's less of a divide, you know, between what you see and what you can do. And I'm sure, like, through time there's been loads of those phases,
right.
And there has, you know, if you look back over punk music, you know, 60s punk music, whatever, yeah, rock and roll and stuff,
yeah,
I'm sure a lot of teenagers looked at that and could see instantly, yeah, I could actually do that, you know. But yeah, the 80s were different. At least what the TV shows you is very different.
Yeah. So you're going to go back to guitar because this film pushing you into the music as sounds and experiment, and so I'm going to bring instruments back. You're still a teenager?
Was I still? Now I was probably about like early 20s,
okay,
you know.
And through school?
Yeah, I mean, at school I listened to a lot of music, like a lot of young people do, and preoccupied by music and the style and all this stuff. But yeah, I don't know, I'm quite into the idea of sort of retiring into the world of music as an older person. You know, I feel that it feels more and more relevant to me, like, the older I get, rather than escaping me, you know what I mean, like,
yeah.
Youthful idea of rock and roll or whatever. I feel what I'm getting into, especially with a lot of improvisation and just making tunes and recording and stuff, it feels more and more relevant to me the older I get. Somehow I think I get less bothered about the whole style thing or what people might think of it, and I think that's, I don't know, I think for what I'm doing it's quite important, because the the kind of world at large doesn't really nod approvingly at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Particularly, you know. It's,
I mean, that's what you got to now. Back then in your early 20s when you're bringing back in the instruments, you make a band or you like just making music on your own?
Well, I did a bit of both. You know, I was at art college and I mm-hmm. rounded people up and we used to jam and...
yeah, what was your first band?
Well, we had this... When I was younger, about 17, we had this group that we called...
Oh, wow. So yeah. You're not doing the film yet?
No, no. But it was... It didn't really work, and you know, I had this acoustic guitar with a pickup on, and it always sounded so bad through an amp, and the action was really high on the guitar, and my fingers hurt. You know, it wasn't flowing. You know what I mean?
But you had a band.
Yeah,
were you writing your own songs?
Yeah, and we played just at friends, we just jammed. And
do you have a name?
Yeah, we called Beat Girl, after a film, this kind of 60s film.
Okay,
and yeah, but then I did start doing stuff on my own, just really very privately with tape recorders. And
this is after the film?
Well, kind of at the same time, you know, but I didn't play it to anyone, maybe my sister or something.
Okay.
But it was the kind of more like what I'm into doing now in a way, sort of come full circle, just funny little tunes and stuff.
Did you make a band though?
No, at that point, no, I was very much you know, didn't play any of that to anyone.
So you just making music for yourself?
Yeah, on a tape recorder sort of thing.
But this Hamilton Yarns, right, what we just heard, now that was a band. When did they come around?
Well, we first started 2002.
Oh, so that's late 20s. So between the early 20s and the late 20s, you're just making music for yourself.
Yeah, electronic stuff and sort of on the four track. But I think when I came out of art college, which is an environment where a lot of support creatively and stuff.
Yeah, right.
And I moved back to my hometown.
Ah, where are you from?
From a town called Shrewsbury, which is in Shropshire, kind of near Wales.
Oh, yeah, the west.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a bit of a ghost town in a way, in terms of creativity. But I just got really busy with just connecting up tape recorders and recording and mucking around in the living room with objects and toy instruments. And I was quite productive really, but I ended up moving down to Brighton because there wasn't really, you know, you want to connect at some point with some other people in that way.
And that's where the Hamilton Yarns.
Yeah.
Because Brighton pretty much has always had a music scene, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what was going on Prince Regent days, you know, but... I'm sure they had some bands around.
Okay. But here you meet some musicians, and so you're going to play with others.
Yeah. And, there's good.
I mean, why'd you pick Brighton and not London?
Well, it was either, I think when I moved, it was either Brighton or Edinburgh, you know. I didn't even think about London.
Okay.
I've never lived in London, and I know people who do, and I visit, but I don't have any desire to be there. It's too buzzy. Even when there's nothing happening, you feel like something happening. I'd rather know when there is or isn't, you know.
Okay. And Edinburgh, that's a trip.
Yeah, I mean, I've never lived there actually, but it was just somewhere that I just thought it sounds nice, you know.
Yeah, I've played Scotland, there a few times. I like it.
I mean, I would like to live in Scotland just for access to the hills, you know.
Yeah,
I love
it
out there.
Right, beautiful.
The West Coast. You keep going for a few hours. It's amazing.
But you ended up in Brighton, and how'd you meet the cats? Who become your? It's your first band.
Yeah, well, you know.
Since this letting go of the acoustic guitar with the pickup and the high action,
yeah.
And then the introverted self-study.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I moved to Brighton, and I was still doing all that electronic,
right?
Sort of twinking around with toys and stuff, contact mics, the world of contact mics, and I made a tape, and somebody got hold of the tape and they got me to play a gig, which I was very nervous about, but I did it. And
solo?
Yeah, and then I kind of met people through doing that, but to kind of whiz through all that world, I think I just got to a point where I was just really sick of you know, like big to little adapters and four-way plugs and all that stuff. You just can't find the right adapter, and so you just think, what about that acoustic guitar, you know? That's just sitting there. I could just do that. That's easy.
Right.
No electricity. It was almost you know, because it was an acoustic thing when we started, so it was like, we don't plug into anything, you know, and that was so liberating.
And who's in that first band?
Well, it was me and Alistair, who's still in Hamilton Yarns. You know, I guess essentially it's me and him plus other people who floated in and out. And
so like the core?
Yeah, I mean, it ended up like that just because we were the only ones who kind of stuck at it.
What was that first version? Who was with the, you know,
that Alistair? Was, yeah, me and Alistair and a guy called Richard. He played saxophone.
What was Alistair on?
Sorry?
What did Alistair do?
Alistair played what he plays now, really, mainly cornet.
So it was cornet, acoustic guitar, and saxophone.
Yeah, and like, you know, I was playing the drum with my feet and stuff like that. So it's kind of... but now Alistair does loads of writing on piano and stuff, so a lot of the, so half the stuff is kind of what he's written on piano. And yeah.
Okay. You got some stuff from those early Hamilton Yarn days?
Yeah, I think so.
Let's listen to some. From Pedro Show, that was We Danced and Danced, Hamilton Yarns, and I got Ian here. We got more to talk about, but we're at the end of the first hour, June 9, 2008, Watt from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. June 9, 2008, it's a Watt from Pedro Show here in Brighton, England. I'm here with Ian, and ran out of time there at the first hour, But we played something from the very beginning days of Hamilton Yards.
Mm.
Right? Something called We Danced and Danced. And it's like one of the first things you recorded.
Yeah, it was... I mean, when we got together, I guess I instigated it in that I'd started trying to write tunes on the guitar, which is, began as kind of little, I don't know, maybe a 40 second thing that I liked, and then I realised that you can make a song by that other 40 second bit you like, you can stick them together.
And if you do it again, 80 seconds
off. It's like you've got what?
120 seconds.
Yeah, and in conventional terms, you know, you're getting towards making a song, and that felt really exciting. Because I kind of, you know, it's people who make songs, that seems kind of rudimentary, but when you don't, it's when you've just spent a lot of time twiddling around with sort of, you know, toys and things that make bloopy noises.
Ah, what you were doing on your own.
Yeah, the idea of making a song feels like quite an ambitious thing.
And then you're working with Alistair and Rich, right?
Yeah,
for the first time, so you're like, it's not just for yourself. And you met them by them coming to your gig?
I've met, yeah, Richard, yeah, because he was into doing sort of improvised, more sort of, noise kind of freestyle stuff, improv stuff. And I actually played with him once, you know, he played saxophone and I kind of just played loads of noisy things, which was good, you know, but he's a nice guy anyway, which is the main thing. And Alistair, I'd heard him playing cornet and I liked and I still do like the way he plays. It's very subtle, breathy kind of, yeah, it's got humour. So.
So this We Dance and Dance.
Yeah, well that features both. The kind of the setup we had then really, and there was no overdubs, it was just what we had, which was I was playing the drum and the cymbal and the guitar and singing, and they played the cornet and the soprano sax.
And this is 2002.
Yeah, and that was the first thing, and originally it was like, it's a nice idea to do a recording project, you know, let's record some
you
songs.
Didn't do a gig yet?
No, we were just, I mean, it was just like get together, and I seem to remember that actually asked a few other people to come along, but no one else came.
Yeah,
and I was a bit gutted, you know, because I thought we were going to have this violin player, and but in retrospect, I'm so glad it was like that.
You know,
stripped down, definitely.
Okay, when do you think of the name? I know this is corny, but when do you think of the name Hamilton Yards?
Well, Hamilton's my middle name.
Yeah,
and you know, all these days, like in the 80s, watching Top of the Pops, Adam and the Ants and stuff, around that time, the name Hamilton was just really not cool at all, and my sister used to just kind of take the piss out of me for having a stupid name. It's a bit kind of pompous, you know, and all birthday cards would be written to Ian Hamilton, and you know, and I resisted this for so long, and then I think just a couple of years or a year before we actually did this band, Hamilton Yards, I had this real kind of like embracing of my middle name, like, yeah, I like that name, it's ridiculous, it's good. And Yarns, I mean, my first name's Ian, and it's funny actually, Sam here, who I live with, he had a phase of calling me Yarn, you know, because it's like Eon.
What, like Eon?
Yarn, yeah.
Oh, yeah, like a last syllable.
Yeah, but also, the Yarns thing, it appealed to my, I don't know, cottagey aesthetic of like, balls of wool and stuff, you know. So, and it was like the idea
stories.
Was it was stories. Yeah, right. They weren't necessarily strong literal stories, but it was definitely this idea of like, let's do some music that has got a beginning and an end, you know,
in the middle,
rather than just a kind of swirl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
absolutely
chaotic thing. It's like, yeah, let's get conventional here.
Was there other people doing music like you were doing here in Brighton? I mean, were you listening to other cats? Trying a little bit.
No.
So you guys were like the lone voice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there were people doing stuff, but I never heard it. And
was it records or stuff? This was just a homebrew thing. You, Alistair, and Richard.
Yeah. We just made, you know.
I mean, other people like records, maybe not people doing gigs.
Oh, listening to records.
Because sometimes you think of coming out of a scene, but sometimes it's reaction against the scene.
Well, I think it was probably more like that in a way. I think at the time there was still a lot of people doing rock bands, you know, drum kit, electric guitars,
bass.
And we had no bass. We have got a
that
bit
kick
of bass.
Drum, you were playing that kick drum.
Yeah, there's
right?
the bass. That's all you need. Oh, the thing about bass, I mean, I love bass, but it's relative, isn't it? You know, like if you play to sort of thumb piano or something, the relative low frequency feels so low until you then hear something really low and then it feels high, you know. So as long as you don't ever put the bass in, people will think it's bassy, you know. So so we've got, you know, that's fine, you don't need a bass.
So yeah, all you bass players looking for job protection, don't put the
but I love playing.
No relative bass. You out.
Yeah, but that, no it's acoustic thing. That was a liberating thing, you know, you don't have to plug anything in.
What about stand up?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, T-chest or something, that'd be good. Yeah. So
Jimmy Garrison, Paul Chambers.
Yeah, give it a go, you know.
They're not still around. So we're going to hear something now, Future Man, Primal Man.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Hamilton Yarns down the road a little
bit. This is our last. Well, this is
most recent.
Yeah, stuff. It's off our last CD that we did, which is a double CD, and one was called Future Man, and one was called Primal Man.
So you put them together.
Yeah, you know, a bit of contrast.
Goes back to that beginning idea. You got one bit.
Yeah.
Another bit.
Yeah, Future Man, Primal Man.
Yes, listen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Started off the second hour here with Future Man, Primal Man by Hamilton Yarns. And then we heard Bold Blue and Bright, the DJ Scotch Egg remix by Sam Duke. And then Best by Hamilton Yarns. And, Best.
Best. Yeah, it's... Well, when I picked that song, I sort of wished that I'd done a bit of research, which I've been planning to do, because I think this is the way with, like, writing yarns that are quite loose and sometimes a bit abstract, and often the ideas come from really varied places. For example, Bess came from a line in a book which is called Cycling Around Britain, and it's this... really nice looking little cheap paperback book with two cyclists on the front, and it's just about various places around Britain, and there's one line in it which said Bess wrote a message on the window with a diamond. And the research that I wish I had done, or maybe people out there kind of understand this better than me, is firstly, like, who was Bess?
She's on a bike.
I actually think Bess refers to one of our queens of the past, and I do believe there was a character called Tom. So this song, which is about Bess kind of being in a tower, or in a at least in a building, locked up, and scratching a message on the window with a diamond, which a message is asking to be rescued, and Tom comes along and rescues Bess.
So Tom was on the bike.
Well, it does say in a song that he rode back from the stables. I imagine the horse bit could easily be a bike.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it was like a Honda 50cc, you know, really.
Oh, cycling, like motorcycling.
No, I don't know, but this is the problem when you kind of pick stuff everywhere. It's a problem, but it's actually quite interesting because it can get you to look into something like, where actually did that come from? I haven't
done
it yet.
Curiosity.
Yeah, but I'm gonna. That's my plan. So for me, it was just like an archetypal sort of story, you know, damsel in distress. And at the end, they go off great, and it's just
a happy ending.
But then, that's just the end of the song. I don't know what actually happened after that. So, could have been tragic.
Okay. Mystery.
Yeah.
Mystery. And then, you know a little about Sam. Well, Sam's cooking up chow now, so he can't speak for himself. But you knew something about him with DJ Scotch Egg. They're working together.
Well, yeah, they're both doing this project called Same Things, which is great. Yeah, it's good. Like, it's kind of like whatever they want to do. Which
a Game Boy involved?
Not really. I mean, like, because Scotch Egg, he does a lot of that, but the two of them together seem to be doing more stuff like instruments, and just there's no defining style, and I like that in music.
Well, when you came to Brighton, when did you meet Sam? Right away?
No, it was probably a few years. I went to see his band at the time, Lil Lux. And I met a girl who's really into Lil Lux, so I used to go and see Lil Lux. And I didn't know kind of how to digest that music at the time. I think I'm a bit behind the times, but like now, I love it. It's brilliant. But at the time, I didn't get it. I don't know what I was listening to. Probably just some noisy improv kind of stuff.
But were you thinking, man, Sam's got to be in Hamilton Yarns?
Yeah, well, you know, he sung on Ready, Steady, Go. He sung on Future Man, Primal Man. Yeah, he's the one voice that's in tune on that, I think. And, so we rope him in because he's got good high register.
Yeah, he does. He does. I'm thinking. When you're doing the band, are you thinking of what people can bring to the party around your core?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's almost like, I think, because me and Alistair we're quite happy to lend, kind of put a hand to anything, and it's not, what we're looking for is not excellent musicality, it's more like appropriateness or inventiveness. So, you know, Alistair will play percussion, he'll play piano or cornet, and he'll sing. I mean, that is a real...
Marion singing in here.
Marion?
Yeah, you're singing something.
No, I think she's upstairs.
Marion?
Hi. Yeah, I mean, that's funny you're talking about singing. That was an important shift, really, is... And also a fundamental thing when I kind of ask people to play is, are you willing to sing? You know, not are you a good singer, but are you willing to use your voice? You know, because we might want a character, and we can't be every character, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to put on a kind of female voice if it's a female character or whatever.
Right.
So in that respect, yeah, like, you know, what are you willing to do that, and are you relaxed enough to just maybe play a shaker for 3 minutes and then sit there and then make and clap, push some instruments over, you know, like, you don't have to be a virtuoso musician, it's more like the approach, you know.
Yeah.
But that was Anton putting his head through the window asking if Marion was in here singing. Well, because we recently wrote Marion into the band, and she came to London and played a gig with us for the first time, you know, and she's great. She's got a really nice natural voice. She's French.
So you got a song here?
Oh, no, we're going to record it. Yeah, another time, but
it's just gig so far.
Yeah, but that's good, you know. It's kind of like if someone's living in the house, yeah, we might rope them in, you know, because we're here, we're playing. It's like, well, why don't you have a go?
It's part of the deal. Yeah. You're gonna live here. You might be in the band.
Yeah.
Is Rich still playing with you?
No, he's moved. He's in the countryside now, near Bristol.
Okay, when did he leave?
He left after two. Well. If we do it in terms of albums, because we generally record at least one a year, I'm going to say albums, they can be short, like the first one was half an hour, you know, but that was the end of that phase.
Yeah.
So it was like, right, that's that, over, next phase. So he was there for two phases. Two albums.
Now, when he leaves, the band kind of changes.
Yeah. It was, you know, in fact, yeah, it changed, and we got another person in, a girl called Caroline, who played the flute and sung. So that was nice. That was like the first time we had a girl's voice. It's like, yeah.
You got some of that?
I have, yeah. Yeah,
let's play some of that.
His name in vain. Friday, do you want to be kind, friend, or a bike guy?
Watt from Pedro Show. We just heard Born to Go Reminder, Hamilton Yarns. That's Ian's equivalent of birthday.
Yeah, it's my... I think I came up with it, that phrase, on a birthday card for someone, and I quite liked it, Born to Go Reminder, so I called the song It.
Also, you had the song and then came up with the title.
Yeah. Well, I had the title, but it wasn't a title.
That's interesting. How do you do things? Do you have title first and then the song, or other way around?
No, it's always...
Always a song first, then the title.
Yeah, always a song and then the words. Although the words might be in a book somewhere on the other side of the house, and they'll join up the song with the song one day.
Majority of my songs, they start with the title.
All right.
Because it gives me a focus.
Yeah, maybe that's...
And sometimes I change it.
Yeah.
Later on. After, but even before the music, a lot of times I come up with the title first.
Because
it goes back to Miniman days. I had to have focus because I didn't really write songs till punk.
Mm.
My first song, or my only song as a teenager, was called Mr. Bass King Outer Space. And obviously that's about inferiority complex. bass players was real low in the hierarchy of the 70s music. And I was reflecting on that.
Yeah.
It's about me basically playing some bass solo on stage, and the rest of the band is just made tiny.
Yeah,
it's like ridiculous. So embarrassed. Luckily, there's no recording of it, and I can't even remember the words of the music.
That's a shame. Well, that last one, Born Again Reminder, was quite. We've never had a bass, but what Richard, that was phase two, if you like. I know we're getting into this chronological thing, but we'll just flip back a bit to phase two, Richard's involvement, when I was just, I don't know, a bit sick of this bright, shiny sound. So he also had clarinet, and it wasn't a bass clarinet, but I think it was an alto. It's still like a long one with a
sure,
bell.
Sure.
And
Eric Duffy.
Oh, that was great. So that's what features, and so that's as bassy as we get, really.
And then before that, we heard Sam Duke again with Edith's Kids, another DJ Scotch egg remix. Do you know anything about that tune, Edith's Kids?
I don't know.
You could ask Sam, but he's cooking the fish right now.
Yeah, so another one you caught in your canoe earlier. The one that
kayak.
Oh, right, okay, get it right.
But no, we didn't catch it. There's cats in my harbor who fish out of kayaks, probably more than paddlers. But no, we swam between them two piers. The one pier, the west one, it's all burned up.
Yeah.
And then the one that's always been going.
Yeah, the one that Sam must have told you the story about. That pier ruined the other pier, kind of thing. Yeah, someone on a boat chucked a flaming torch into the west pier, which is now the one that's now a skeleton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember I was here to play a gig 4 years ago, and it was much higher. It's been sinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we paddled between them two and didn't have any chance for fishing. Saw a cormorant. Saw a huge one, and I wasn't sure, was that a cormorant? And then I saw one that looked kind of like the ones we got, and they're from Asia. But they're getting around. Wow. I didn't see any sea lions or dolphins or, well, we got them where I live, but it was beautiful, and you could go right off the beach. I didn't have to, you know, no shelter like the harbor I do in Pedro. Sometimes I go in that open sea, but the waves are a little too... And this was calm enough where I could just put in like a pool. And the beach actually is rocks. So it's not like beach like you think of sand.
Yeah, you have to go quite a long way to get sand. I miss sand. You know what? You know, I like sand.
Well, our sand in Pedro is actually from Catalina Island. They brought it over. Just like in Waikiki, you know, that's from Santa Barbara.
Right.
Because that coral cuts your feet. In fact, you go out far enough in the water, you start getting your feet
cut. Yeah, they just
up.
Covered it all in sand.
Yeah. So, most of the other Hawaii beaches, they got the coral. It's very beautiful, but man, is it tough on the feet. Then we started off that chunk there with The Kind Kind by Hamilton Yarns, and an 8-minute opus.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was, you know, that's a proper story, really. That's
a real yarn.
Place we get to a kind of proper yarn. And also, that was the first time Alistair sung, which for me was a real, like, yes, you know, he's in there. And also, it was a turnaround for me because I actually tried recording the song with me singing it, and it somehow didn't sound right. And at that point, I think I realised Alistair's voice, at least for certain things, is better than mine, and that some people might not like that, but I like that feeling.
When he wrote the words?
No, I wrote the words.
You wrote the words, so you know the story.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the story? What's the yarn?
Well, the story is, how does it start? Not a good day. The refrain is God make some harmony for God's sake. So it's a kind of tragic tale of a character. He just attempts various things. Quits his job in the church. I'm not sure where I got this idea from. I think my dad's dad is a vicar. And he's a bit disillusioned with it all, anyway. And he goes...
family business.
Yeah, and he goes home and he sees his wife with someone else, with another man. So, you know, it's constantly this... He's kind of just saying, God, make some harmony for God's sake. You know, it's not really working out, despite all his hard work in the church. And he goes down to the sea and he finds a boat and he rows out and he thinks that you like the story, that one.
Was that accident?
Yeah, it just gets choppy and
it wasn't like he dumped himself out of the boat.
But then God's
will though, maybe the weather. Yeah,
we see. Make some harmony, and God is constantly saying which kind you want. So this song's called The Kind Kind, and God says, which kind do you want? Do you want the kind kind or refined kind? The kind that creeps up from behind, or just the kind that you recognise? And I think for me at the time, this idea of like harmony, you know, I'm not talking musically, just like could do if you like, being a very subjective idea of what's harmonious, you know, because if you look at just the way the world goes, you know, which kind of harmony you're talking about, because maybe that is harmony. You know, if you pan your sort of consciousness back and you look at things in kind of a big widescreen way, then maybe there's a lot of harmony. It's just there's a lot of niggly stuff that us humans would rather happen differently, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
So that was my little flash of trying to...
It wasn't little, it was probably the longest song you've made.
Well, yeah.
Speaking of long songs, you picked John Coltrane doing Ascension.
Yeah.
Quite a long song. What do you like about Ascension?
The drums and the piano.
Right.
But I tell you what else I like. I mean, I'm not a massive Coltrane fan, although I've bought stuff. Like when I was younger, I bought records and I got really into it. But then there came a point when my ears started sort of creeping past the saxophone into what was going on behind it. And I love this frenetic sort of free jazz sort of drumming that you get that in Ascension, certainly.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Also the less free stuff on these other recordings as well. But that and the piano. So, and I think with Ascension, because everyone was doing everything at once, the saxophone's not on top. It's really equal out, and you can go in any crack you like and weave in around and listen to details and stuff. It's not like a saxophone with a band behind it, you know. That's not a reason to like the music. Great, obviously.
I think John Coltrane wanted that situation for himself to be in. I can't see it being an accident. I think at times he wanted to be part
of the gang. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, big time.
And
big time, two basses.
But I didn't know you were going to play the whole thing, but, you know, great.
Oh, yeah. No.
You can't just press stop.
Yeah, I don't think he...
It turned his grave.
You know, I think there was, like, EPs
really?
Made, a 5-minute aside things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think I've seen them. Maybe Raymond had one. Yeah, and they're like excerpts.
Why?
But I bet you that might have been maybe a label decision rather than his. But I don't know, man. I wish he was here. Ask him.
Yeah.
It was really weird when I first heard him and stuff. I didn't know he was dead. Mm. I thought he was an older punk rocker.
Yeah.
Because I didn't ever hear that kind of music. And then punk people turned me on. Raymond turned me on to it. And I was like, well, I never heard something like this. I didn't know. I had no idea.
Mm.
I think... within his scene reading about stuff, he was pretty brave. I think he took a lot of blows for trying stuff and not just doing tried and true formula. So in that respect, besides, for me, it's just beautiful. I like that nerve that he had. There's some film thing of him playing a gig towards the end outside at a festival, and there's this handful of people looking up at the stage. I mean, the saxophone wants to jump out of his hands. It's just like, almost like he's just trying to hold on to it. The music is, and these people are just looking at him like, what's this about? Like, somehow you need references. You can't just let go and let be and join. Whoa. You got some more music you're going to play for us here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, I suppose we could keep chronological.
What about the phase after...
Okay, that's the...
Alistair starts singing.
Yeah, well, the phase after that was actually... the girl, Caroline, he does sing on that song. She's the voice of God in that. She left, and we're a little bit, you know, unsure what to do. You know, oh, who can we get in? You know, what instrument? But we just thought, should we just have a go, like the two of us? So we just, both of us, and by this time we've been using the harmonium quite a lot, a little portable pedal harmonium.
Yeah.
And it was really fun just seeing how many things you can do at once. And so we did like the next phase, if you like, was Mr. Jack phase, which is just me and Alistair together. And yeah, that went on for a bit.
Well, let's do some of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Watt from Pedro show. That was Hamilton Yarns with Into the Dark Depths of Ocean. I got it right. And we can tell singing about that.
So, well, it sounds like a recurring theme, isn't it? What with the guy in the other song, Sinking.
Oh, yeah, or further down the road.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe that's just Living by the Sea or something. And I'm a bit scared of the sea. I like it, but I think that's this preoccupation, is this dark thing, deep thing that's quite foreboding, but also, you know, exciting, sort of infinite.
Blah, right. Blah. Who joins you and Alistair on that one?
Well, that, you see, this is the phase, if you like, Mr. Jack, this was called, and it was the story, tenuous as it may be, but the whole album was a story about a swan who turned into a man and then back into a swan again, and that song was the last song when he turns back into a swan. So, I don't know whether what swans feel like about the dark depths of the ocean, or whether he'd rather been on the village pond, but you know, he's there and he's back as a swan. And that was joined by, it wasn't just me and Alistair, we roped in a friend of ours, Blue, who moved into the house at the time, and she came up with that refrain, bam ba ba bam, and kind of almost joking, you know, but I loved it, so I got her to sing that, and Alistair does the main voice on that. So yeah, by this point he's quite, yeah, he's up for it, you know, right. He's giving the words, and well, we both sing on it actually, but you know, he's in there. Yeah, that's the story of that one really. Shige might have been on it. Shige is Scotch Oak, because he was around at the time, and I know a couple of songs we got him to. At the end, there's a kind of the shouting bit, kind of whooping and stuff. That was those of us in the room.
Oh, cool. So, very cool.
So that was fun. That was really fun doing that. You know, the bass drum was like my heel against the floorboards. You know, but it's got a kid like
old blues style. Well, we're at the end of the second hour, June 9, 2008. Wow, Pedro show. Hold tight for hour three. June 9, 2008. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show. Thank you. Watt from Pedro show. Oh shit. There we go. Sorry about that. That was No Poets with a Z there, and Ringo. And we start off the third hour with Come the Weird by Hamilton Yards. And with me is Ian. And I have to apologize because I said at the beginning of this hour that was the ninth, but actually it's the 10th. It's the next day, and we're finishing up Watt from Pedro show here in Brighton, England. Same pad. In fact, I'm in the same seat, but it is day later. We do have almost same sun weather, though, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit more cloudy.
That means what? Hell's on the way?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I think it's coming.
For Isle of Wight. Yeah. So I get it poured on. Yeah, Come the Weird.
Come the Weird. Yeah, well, that was just like a little instrumental tune. Come the Weird.
It's after Mr. Jack.
Yeah, well, at this point, we'd recruited a couple of people who lived in our house, actually. I lived in my house, because I don't live in the same house as Alistair. So, Blue, who was on Mr. Jack a little bit, and Joss, who plays the accordion. So we're now like a four-piece, almost like a band, you know.
Are you doing gigs?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, throughout all this time, we play regularly, and I think partly the reason we regularly record a whole new, you know, album, or we go into a new phase, is because after a couple of times playing the same set, it feels almost like a theatre show. Like, okay, what are we going to do next? What's the next story?
Right,
so
right.
We come up with a whole new set.
Right.
Songs
you don't
want to
beat it into the ground.
No. I mean, sometimes it can get a bit extreme. You play something once, it's like, okay, what are we going to do next time? But
only once.
Yeah. No, normally a couple of times, you know.
Okay.
But but luckily we seem to be able to just come up with new stuff each time. And this was a new phase, which was the Showboat Over. And yeah, I'm not sure what the Showboat. This recurring theme.
Yeah, because I brought up this movie with the Gardner, and
you haven't seen it. I should see it, really. But for me,
it's
kind of like
it's bizarre because it's a period in U.S. history that's kind of strange.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some people wanted the movie like taken out of like school situations. It was kind of embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just reflects the times, and you gotta have that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can look back, I mean, like going through the plantation, you know, and the carriages and the slave people are laughing and singing and working.
Yeah.
It's like this insane thing, you know. But I'm a big Ava Gardner fan, so you know, Night of the Guana?
No, I don't know.
Yeah, Richard Burton.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. No, she was intense. I think she's the lady who broke Frank Sinatra's heart.
Right.
Oh, so you know that. Okay. But she's a good actress. Good actress. So, but your Showboat.
Yeah.
You got a hyphen in there, too.
Showboat.
Yeah.
Comma over. So, I mean, that came actually from one of the songs that ended up on that album. It was this long kind of automatic writing, rhyming, sort of rap type thing. Actually, you played that song. It's called All the Low Notes, and there's one line in it: "Turn the showboat over." So that just came from just doing that spontaneous writing, rhyming stuff. But I think for me, what it meant was it was really about this house, which I've lived in, and I'm still here. You know, but
the house is a showboat.
Well, it's so covered in windows, and sometimes, especially in the winter, it feels like you're just this big kind of cruise liner or something, because the streets at night, especially when they're empty, you know, it's and those times when it felt kind of bleak here, like, you know, I just really wanted to turn this showboat over, like push it over into the sea, kind of, you know, escape. But and I suppose in some ways, like, the house had been a good center of creativity in a really low key kind of way, you know.
Yeah,
just living around Sam, and other people who lived here, and it was really fun. There was always music going on and stuff, but maybe at that point I just wanted to push it all over, you know, the showboat over. And so it kind of, maybe the excitement and spontaneity of the Mr. Jack phase, you know, where we were just playing around, and suddenly maybe it felt a responsibility having these other people join. And but it's still positive, and come the weird, I guess that was the weird. It's just like nature, you know, the weird and the wonderful,
The
wonderment, and so I just like that.
Perry once told me about keeping the child's eye, and it was like being infantile or fake naive, but the wonder, the disease of being curious. Keeps a spark going and keeps the cynicism at bay and hubris, and just keep you from a place where you can't learn anymore because you think you've got it all figured out. And I think having the wonder, the sense of being able to have wonder about things, something strange, different. See, I think you have to be ready on it, or weird will be threat. Fear. And it won't be igniter of wonder. So what's this? A threat to me.
Yeah.
I have to deal with this in a defensive, abusive way.
Yeah. Whereas if you kind of beckon it on, it's
right.
Come on, I'm ready for change.
What street is this?
It's called Oxford Place.
Oxford Place.
Yeah. And we're the only house on this street. I don't know if you noticed.
You're over the
funeral director. Funeral. Yeah.
We call him mortuary.
What do you call them?
We call them mortuaries.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit more morbid, isn't it?
But, yeah, you prepare bodies, right?
Yeah.
We've got one in Pedro, it's McNerney's.
But it's very peaceful.
Yeah,
I imagine. Do you know what I mean? It's not... I mean, it's better than living above, a cafe, burger bar.
Oh, yeah. There, Sam was... We went up on the roof, you know? And he said there's a skylight there, and one of your buds fell through the... And he got saved by... He fell into a casket?
Well, he didn't fall into it. That would have been great. But I've got a photo looking down the hole, and it's all like wires and plasterboard, all broken and tangled. And then at the bottom, there's this stack of coffins with sort of chalky fingerprints on. And I took that after he'd fallen through. So he was kind of saved because there's this high stack of coffins.
High stack of coffins.
Else he would have hit the ground.
Right.
But yeah, we love the idea that it would have been open and
he
could have closed on him as he fell in, you know.
Yeah, whenever you're on roofs, people, watch out for skylights and maybe not sit on them.
Yeah.
Okay, so the band now has got four people.
Yeah, I've got Joss, Jocelyn, and Blue, and me and Alistair still.
Right.
We kind of, the phases before that, we toyed with lots of piano and harmonium and stuff, and this was... going a little bit back to kind of some bare bones of like guitar and bits of singing, but also lots of little incidental moments and clattering around.
And tour, did you guys get in the van? And
not really. We play. If people ask us to play, we'll go and play.
Yeah, but you never set up a month of gigs.
No.
Did you ever?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know. I mean, that's what that song that I played at the start, Ready, Steady, Go.
Yeah.
Envy sort of sounds off.
Because the Sam's tour world. we never told them, but Sam is a drummer, banjo, guitar, bass.
Mm.
He plays a lot of things in the Go team. And I don't think we ever mentioned him.
No.
But that takes Sam away from the... showboat here from time to time, and we started the show with the Ready, Steady, Go. That's about Sam's adventure life. Watt has a little bit knowledge of that. This is my maybe 68th tour.
Yeah,
doing it for a little while, and but you don't have the perspective when you're part of it, or you can get too mired in it, I guess. But somebody looking on the outside always, I think, has a better sense of it. My friends in Pedro, you know, I leave and come back and stuff. And for me, you know, hey, I'm back in the town. And for them, it's like, whoa. And then after a while, it's just the normal thing. You're gone. You're here. When are you here? When are you gone? For me, it's very concrete when I'm here. When I'm back in my town, man, I love it. But I have to go on the mission. You know, I have to do the Don Quixote. I have to sally forth, you know. You roam, but then you roost. So for me, it's very concrete. But it's kind of illusory to other people. They can't count on when I'm home, when I'm not. And so maybe... Yeah, it's just so much different than their life. But it takes a lot of different kinds of people. I don't think everybody's got torn in them. Some people, because I've seen this, some people can only do it so long. And they have to stop. Other people, they can't stop.
Yeah. I think I'd like to do a tour of villages or rural spots, because I'm not really into cities, but I love the countryside, you know. That would be great.
I don't know what it's like growing up in them.
Probably
Sam told me he drove a book mobile.
Oh right, yeah,
and he would visit the towns because kids end up with nothing to do. So they don't get in trouble and stuff. You can with the youth wagon or something.
Yeah.
And
give,
you know, because he knew how to drive trucks from his pops at work, you know. And so that would have been an interesting, interesting.
Yeah. I think you can romanticize the countryside, and I think I've got a tendency living in a town, quite a busy town, to romanticize it, but. You know.
You talk to the cats from there, it's like, man.
Yeah, well, that's it. They want to get in the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like that in U.S. too. Small, we don't have the little villages so much, but we got what we would call smaller towns. But it's a relative thing. In a way, they're just as hooked up because of the TV, but in their mind, I'm not really living unless I'm in San Francisco. But someone once told me, wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And how much can you change on the outside to change it's on the inside?
Yeah.
But I've seen the artistic people from different paths have come to one town and bring an energy, like the cats who come to the house to play with you here in the yards. If you're all in those separate towns,
I'm pitching all these cats. These fairy cats.
It'd be hard for you to come together to make the yards. So there's a good and bad kind of thing. Well, maybe with the internet we can stay in our little villages and flow files. Because there comes a thing too about living so close on each other in the city, we get dehumanized by that. Close enough to do gigs and then close enough to really get on each other's nerves. So, you know, it's all fraught with danger. So do we go to the next phase, or you want to do another song from the what phase? The showboat over.
I can play something else.
Okay.
Thank you. to the rolling hills and up the downs. You still can feel the chill beneath the ground. Just beneath the top, we'll have to stop, though you can't see a lot. It's a long way
thank you. Thank you.
Swat from Pedro show again with the monitor on. Sorry about that. Here with Ian, and let's see, we just heard Walking In by Hamilton Yards.
Yeah, yeah. Walking In. Yeah, that was. It's funny we're talking about remixes.
Yeah.
Like, how weird
we did a couple of Sam songs with the DJ Scotch Egg remix.
But there's been various times when we've got really into kind of not exactly remixing our own music, but certain things like something that starts with a song and has a guitar and various sounds on top, like removing the guitar and seeing what you're left with.
So like a version.
Really enjoy doing that. Yeah, but that ends up that being the definitive sort of finished version of that song, you know. And I'm not sure if that's how that Walking In came about, but it's got that feel. I think it might have started off as something that was going into something, but in the end,
yeah, just a cornet.
That was great, just the drone, you know. And yeah.
And this is part of the next phase.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, which the next phase
after Showboat.
Yeah, which we've. Well, we've been there before. Search for the Underwater Town, which was Future Man and Primal Man, and this is off Primal Man. This is like the first introduction to that side, if you like.
Okay.
This.
How's the band different?
It's the same. Yeah, it's the same actually.
Same people doing it different.
Doing it quite differently, in that a lot of what this album was made of was kind of like what I was just explaining in a way, but also little incidental moments. I think like as we've gone through, you know, like the sort of history of being in this group, the things that we've started getting more attracted to, like me and Alistair, is these moments in between the songs, especially playing live, because a lot of the time when we play live we'll have the songs, if you like, and then we'll have ways of getting from one song to song. So finding a way of shifting that key or holding something, like keeping the rhythm going or keeping the drone going, and because we like the idea that there's no place to stop and break the spell or whatever. Which I suppose if you're enjoying it is nice, if you're not it might be kind of frustrating, you know.
Give me a break. Yeah. No.
But increasingly we were just more and more attracted to these moments, and it was like, you know, oh, never mind the song, what about this in between bit?
Interlude.
So I think when we did this Search for the Underwater Town, although there are obviously defining moments that you could say that's a song that lasts a few minutes, they're all kind of interspersed with these moments, you know, which might be sort of a minute long or 30 seconds. And I think these are the bits that I, at the time anyway, these are the bits that I like best. And some of it was going out and recording stuff like, I don't know if you probably didn't make it up to that, but you know where the pier is in Brighton, the old pier?
Yeah, on the paddle boat.
Yeah, well, on the right side of that, you got all these boats.
West of it.
Yeah, yeah. And sort of on the mast, you've got these clacking in the wind.
Right.
So we recorded things like that and went out and
the pulleys on the lines kept
yeah,
the mast.
Yeah, but it's amazing ringing sound because they're hollow sort of metal. We did a lot of going out with a recorder, you know, and taking bits and then coming home and adding bits and bobs to it. It's a big jump from playing the guitar and the cornet and writing a song. And also these yarns are very sort of unliteral. There's not that many words in them. So that's kind of where it went.
More instrumental?
Yeah, yeah. So the incidental, like, I don't know, the way that we thought of it was like a play or something, but without any actors.
And we heard some instrumental traditional music from Japan, from Yakum Godo Society, and a tune called Izugawa. And then we heard two Hamilton Yarn songs, Badger Tangle, which was kind of like maybe an interlude.
Yeah,
piece.
Yeah.
and then Beachy Head, which is a place down the road a bit, huh?
Yeah,
it's a cliff. It's people like to leap off.
Yeah, popular spot for people who've had enough. Yeah, big kind of high point, chalky white cliff.
Yeah, yeah.
You often hear people, someone's jumped off. It's like Seven Sisters, they call it. The seven sort of humps.
Right, right.
When you're at the start of it, you can see it curving around these sort of seven bumps.
Wow.
And I think Beachy Head is just beyond that. So it's a big stretch of kind of sheer sort of white cliff.
And what inspired the tune? The cliff? The leaping?
The leaping, I guess. Because that's what, you know, that's what the words are about. And one of the lines is women roll, men run and jump. Because apparently,
oh.
I mean, this guy, you say, who was filming Golden Gate Bridge, I'd be interested to know if anyone did roll. Because apparently the story goes that a percentage of women roll off, whereas more men run and jump. And I don't know how true that is.
Oh, wow, I never thought of rolling off a cliff. Because me, I get vertigo sometimes to look over a cliff. I have to get on my stomach and I'm so afraid.
Well, maybe it's.
I've never thought of like rolling off.
Maybe it starts like lying on your stomach and then they just kind of creep
on over.
Like, or maybe it's a forward roll. I don't know. Cartwheel.
Oh, man. It's weird. Last radio show, because there was a jump in while we were doing the show, the ambulances. And fire trucks we heard, but there was some talk of the guests on the show where all of a sudden got into this suicide talk, cliff jumping, and now here we have two.
I'm
pretty psychic.
I know, it's quite a gruesome topic, but it's a local spot. It's a really lovely spot.
Nice. Same with our cliffs, they're not always used for jumping on.
Yeah.
Probably less than just looking,
Most
look over.
But when you're on your own up there, especially, I don't know, sort of in the autumn time or something, and it's a windy day, which is a really lovely time to go walking there because it's quiet. You know, it's quite desolate, quite bleak, really. And you know, if someone spots you, they're definitely giving you the eye, like, what are you doing near the edge? So don't do it.
Don't do it.
I always thought. You know, like in the song it says, it's a long way round. It's the long way round. I don't know.
What about the Badger Tangle?
Badger Tangle. Well, that was just like a big tangle of kind of percussion, and got Richard in playing his alto clarinet.
So he comes back?
Yeah, well, he was just in town for a few days, so it's like, right.
Wow.
Gonna get you on here, you know.
Right, right. Now this is the Primal Man.
Beachy Head was from Showboat Over.
No, but from that phase. Walking in.
Yeah, that's Primal Man.
From this Primal Man phase. But then there's the Modern Man.
Well, there's Primal Man, which is one of the CDs, and then the other is Future Man.
Future Man, Modern.
Yeah.
Sorry. is Future Man another phase or a continuation of the same phase?
No, they were all the same. It's just that we just recorded as much of the music that we'd been making.
Right. But let's hear some Future Man.
Okay.
Thank you.
Beatles show. That was One Hand in the Casket, something off Future Man, mm-hmm. Hamilton Yarns.
Yeah,
another interlude.
Boy, it was actually, and that was that bit of music, cause it belonged to another song, and that was a good example of what happens when you take the piano away and you're left with the bits, and I really like the bits and bobs. So that was like one track of almost like an outtake or something, really.
And then we heard two from the Underwater.
Yeah, which that's, I know it sounds confusing, but Future Man, Primal Man are part of Search for the Underwater Town.
Search for the Underwater Town.
Yeah. And
we heard Industrial Revolt, and before that, Wade Across the Paddock.
Well, Wade Across the Paddock, that was a mini disc recording of some kids doing a parade in Lewis, which is a town nearby, and which is a spot called the Paddock. It is a paddock, and they do have horses on there. It was just them shouting, and also there's like a steel pan band, like the local school, their steel pan band playing.
Steel pan band.
And it's funny because earlier you played a song called Ringo, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's the song on Wade Across the Paddock, played on the steel pans. I just really loved it. I didn't know what it was. To me, it was just like this abstract kind of oddity. And I asked the teacher who was like teaching these kids the steel pans, what it was, and she said it was Yellow Submarine, which is a Ringo song, but it doesn't sound like it at all. I love it, and you've got the sound of everyone in the park, but we just added Alistair's cornet to that. He just played this really subliminal quiet line along with it, and then I kind of brought in this sort of, Casio keyboard sound, also quite subtle, but you know, and chopped it up and repeated bits, which is a lot of fun. So yeah, that was in the paddock, and then Industrial Revolt.
Yeah, Industrial Revolt.
A lot of these, it shows how we're sort of sharing the task of coming up with the ideas now. Cause that,
the burden.
The burden, yeah. Because that was Alistair's ditty, Industrial Revolt, and yeah, we just kind of stuck lots of things on top of it, and you know.
There's kind of a Hamilton Yarns has, just under the surface, an industrial angst.
Well, that, I actually wrote loads of words for that, although it's an instrumental.
Yeah.
There are lots of words that exist. And it was kind of the image of these sort of worker bees.
The hive?
The hive, yeah, you know, busy at work whilst the kind of beekeeper takes all the honey. And you know, so there's lots of...
And I've always thought about that. What if the bees are thinking?
Yeah, get lost.
There's a real problem with bees in the U.S. now.
Yeah,
maybe up to a quarter of them disappeared.
Really?
They're dying off. And some people say, I think it was Albert Einstein. Mm. When you lose the bees, watch out, humanity.
Yeah.
You ain't got much left, because it's such a component of it. Ecosystem of the pollination.
Well, also, when you introduce hives, they're not, those bees aren't native to that place, and they will dominate and they will drive out
invasive.
Yeah, the bees, you know, the ones that are keeping that ecosystem. So
yeah.
Going.
I saw some paddling. I saw some cormorants.
Mm.
And they're these fisher birds from Asia, and they're, I love them, but they say, well, nature takes a lot of time to make balances. When you just introduce things, you kind of tumble up the apple cart. But this is the bees with the pollination, besides the honey, they're very involved with agriculture.
Yeah.
So it's a big problem. It's kind of scary. Something about the frogs, certain species of frogs are disappearing. People say these are alarm bell, wake up bells.
Yeah.
Like something's up if you're losing these kinds of things. Other people say, don't worry. you're alarmist. I don't know. What's next for Hamilton Yards?
Well, next is, you know, we've got a whole set. A whole new set that we've been playing for
the next phase.
Yeah, and it doesn't have a name, but generally what we do, we'll be playing a set for you know, 6 months or something, and then we'll record it, and we won't go back.
Oh, you never start a phase with the recording.
No,
it's always a combination of some,
because we write the music and then we get around to recording it, and in the meantime we'd be playing it live.
Okay.
But so we've got a backlog. But what we have done, which is really fun, we've been revisiting old stuff.
Oh wow!
Yeah, because it's much more portable having an acoustic guitar and, and a few bits of percussion in the cornet, you know.
Right.
Rather than trolleying loads of gear up on the train, you know, to London or whatever, we just sort of put it in a rucksack. And so that's been really nice. And Marion, who lives here, inevitably she's been roped in.
Right. You know, part of the new phrase.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we'll see. And I think I'm really enjoying moving away from, we had a phase of doing a lot of kind of quite gnarly, spooky, scrapey sort of discordant stuff, and going back to the old stuff has made us just be a bit more like, oh, just like
some nice tonality,
D major, you know.
Some tonality,
yeah. Yeah, that's good.
No, it's all very interesting, and Ian, I really want to thank you for being on the show.
Oh, it's pretty good.
For me, it was quite an honor to focus a whole lot from Pedro's show on Hamilton Yarns.
It's great.
And I wish you a lot of success. I can't wait to hear the recording. I guess it'll be a few months down the road.
Yeah.
But Sam tells me you're quite dependable on something coming up every few months, so I look forward to it. Please flow it to me.
Yeah, definitely.
And the best of luck with the proj, and give my regards to the rest of the Yarners, especially Alistair.
Yeah.
Too bad we didn't get to have him.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well,
that's okay. He'll hear it.
Yeah.
So this is for you, Alistair. It's June 10th, but it was the June 9th, 2008 Watt from Pedro show from Brighton, England. Keep your powder dry.